expression fathomless.
Yes, once.
Once, he repeated. With an odd little smile, Vijay said, You get to know a lot about a man when he's got his pants down. Jamie ran out of words. I told you he was an alpha male, she said, same as you are. He nodded glumly. I'm attracted to alpha males. So you're attracted to him?
I was.
Now I'm attracted to you.
Me?
She broke into a smile.
Do you see anybody else around here?
Jamie felt off balance. She's teasing me. She must be teasing. Placing her mug on the corner of the console desk, Vijay said,
You're attracted to me, aren't you?
Sure. She got to her feet and put her hand out to him.
So the only question remaining is, your place or mine?
Jamie stood up slowly, not certain his legs would support him. It's not that simple, Vijay. You said that yourself.
That was then. This is now.
But... She planted her hands on her hips.
My God, Jamie, you're as bad as most Aussie blokes. I didn't mean...
She stepped up to him and slid her arms around his neck.
Don't you ever feel lonely, she whispered, or scared? We're so alone out here, so far from home. Doesn't it ever get to you?
Her voice wasn't teasing now. He held her tightly and could feel her trembling. Beneath all the flip talk, she was shivering with anxiety.
I don't want to be alone tonight, Jamie.
Neither do I, he admitted at last.
Neither do I.
Dossier. Varuna Jarita Shektar. It was bad enough being yet another daughter in a family of four girls and only one boy. Being bright and physically attractive only made things worse. Being a dark-skinned Hindu young woman growing up in Melbourne, among fair-haired Aussie males who were either tongue-tied around women or aggressively machismo, did not help matters either. In grammar school, the teachers called out her name as it was written in their records, V. J. Shektar. The other children immediately dubbed her Vijay, and she happily adopted the name, more comfortable with it than Varuna Jarita, the names her parents had given her. Her mother had dedicated her as a baby to the powerful goddess Sakti, whose name means energy. In the teeming Hindu pantheon, Sakti embodies both virginal innocence and bloodthirsty destruction, both an eternal virgin and the goddess of illicit pleasures. Her father largely ignored her, except to worry about where he could find the money for still another dowry on his slender salary as a CPA in a small accounting agency, whose clientele was almost exclusively local Indian business firms. The family's youngest daughter, she was born with spirit. Her mother tried to instill maidenly virtues in Vijay, while her older sisters started dating, and then, one by one, dropped out of secondary school to get married and start having babies of their own. Her one brother went on to college, his father's pride. Vijay refused to quit her classes and find a husband. When her father threatened to beat some obedience into her, she left home and lived on her own with several friends, working nights in restaurants or video stores, or any place that would hire an earnest, honest high school senior who had no intention of letting any man seduce her. She went on to Melbourne University on the Higher Education Contribution Scheme, promising to repay the state most of her college expenses out of her income after she graduated. Still living on her own, she easily qualified for a medical school scholarship. Her mother despaired of her ever getting married and starting a proper family. Her father succumbed to cancer in her final school year, admitting only on his deathbed that he was proud of what she had accomplished. By the time Vijay was doing her internship in the university hospital, she had learned that sex can be used not merely for fun, but for power. Usually she chose fun, although often enough she enjoyed wielding the power that sex lent her, while most of her female friends complained that Australian men were either boors or boobs, Vijay found that there were plenty of intelligent and thoughtful men in her world. Most of them were shy at first,
but that merely added to their charm, as far as she was concerned. For Vijay, sex was a way of learning rather than an all-consuming passion. She enjoyed the power it gave her, and she kept her freedom to choose who and when and what she wanted. She got hurt, of course, more than once. But by the time she began practicing emergency medicine in the rundown hospital of the St. Kilda neighborhood where she had grown up, she considered herself an experienced woman of the world. Unfortunately, she fell deeply in love with an older man, a physician who was already married. Vijay found that even a woman of the world can be tripped up by an urbane, well-to-do scoundrel who tells lies convincingly. By the time she finally faced the truth, she knew she had to get away from this man, away from Melbourne, away from Australia entirely. And she knew she would never again allow love to overwhelm her. Her trip to California started as a vacation, a time to heal her emotional wounds and get some fresh air into her lungs. She stayed 5 years, starting a new career in space medicine, first with the American NASA, and then with Masterson Aerospace Corporation. Vijay became a specialist in the effects of low gravity on the human body and mind. She spent 3 90-day tours on space stations, and was thinking about signing up for a year at Moonbase when she heard about the second Mars expedition. Vijay Shekhar won the position of physician psychologist for the expedition. It was not easy. She had to prove herself in surgery, radiation medicine, and even emergency dentistry. The competition was very exacting, but she won. Even though she promised herself she would not sleep with any of the decision-makers, she won the appointment anyway, for Vijay had learned how to go after what she wanted. And she knew that if she worked hard enough, used all her strengths and skills, she could usually get what she wanted. The trick was to know what she wanted. That was the difficult part. She thought of her patron goddess often. Love and destruction, the twin and inseparable attributes of Sakti. She did not believe in the ancient religion, but she was certain that love carried with it a terrible destructive power, a power that she was determined to keep from hurting her again. Morning, Sol 49. Following his astronaut teammate, Mitsuo Fuchida clambered stiffly down the ladder from the plane's cockpit and set foot on the top of the tallest mountain in the solar system. In the pale light of the rising sun, it did not look like the top of a mountain to him. He had done a considerable amount of climbing in Japan and Canada, and this was nothing like the jagged, snow-capped slabs of granite where the wind whistled like a hurled knife and the clouds scudded by below you. Here, he seemed to be on nothing more dramatic than a wide, fairly flat plain of bare basalt. Pebbles and larger rocks were scattered here and there, but not as thickly as they were back at the base dome. The craters that they had seen from the air were not visible here. At least he saw nothing that looked like a crater. But when he looked up, he realized how high they were. The sky was a deep blue instead of its usual butterscotch hue. The dust particles that reddened the sky of Mars were far below them. At this altitude on Earth, they would be high up in the stratosphere. Fuchida wondered if he could see any stars through his visor, maybe find Earth. He turned, trying to orient himself with the rising sun. "Watch your step," Rodriguez's voice warned in his earphones. "It's..." Fuchida's boot slid out from under him, and he thumped painfully on his rear. "Slippery," Rodriguez finished lamely. The astronaut shuffled carefully to Fuchida's side, moving like a man crossing an ice rink in street shoes. He extended a hand to help the biologist up to his feet. Stiff and aching from a night of sitting in the cockpit, Fuchida now felt a throbbing pain in his backside. "I'll have a nasty bruise there," he told himself. "Lucky I didn't land on the backpack and break the life support rig." "Feels like ice underfoot," Rodriguez said. "It couldn't be frost. We're up too high for water ice to form."
"Dry ice?"
"Ah," Fuchida nodded inside his helmet. "Dry ice. Carbon dioxide from the atmosphere condenses out on the cold rock."
"Yep.
But dry ice isn't slippery."
"This stuff is."
Fuchida thought quickly.